The average fuel prices in Ireland are now at €2.13 for petrol and €2.05 for diesel. I am joined by the head of communications with AA Ireland. That is Paddy Cumming. Good afternoon, Paddy.
Hey, Ciara, how are you?
I am fine, thank you very much. So 11% increase we have seen in the past fortnight, Paddy.
Yeah, dramatic increases, and you'll know from your own area, in particular for some reason, Newbridge always turns out as very, very high in the fuel price survey. So Kildare listeners will be suffering particularly high fuel prices. But look, no, it's a dramatic increase.
So let me just, because you brought it up, let me ask you about Newbridge. What is the story with the area at the moment? What are the prices?
Yeah, it's just traditionally now they've always just been a little bit higher, but no, specifically they would be well over the €2.14 to €2.15 in terms of petrol and a little bit lower for diesel. So it is quite a high area when you compare it nationally. Kildare does tend to suffer. But look, you know, there's a number of factors that are causing this. It's kind of a perfect storm, if you like, for consumers because, you know, for start, oil prices are high. Refining the oil has become a dramatic factor in this. That the oil refineries are now earning about 5, 6, 7 times more profit than they were a year ago because internationally, people have backed away from Russian oil, and a lot of the times the oil and the diesel that we bought came already done and refined. Now it's being refined in a smaller amount of places, and that too is causing the increased price. And then, of course, locally we have tax. The government is said to be making about €25 million more per month now versus a year ago because of the increase in VAT, the increase that they're making in VAT because of the increase in price.
And we're hearing so much from the actual, you know, petrol station owners. You know, some may be taking advantage. I'm not saying that some aren't. I'm not saying that they are either. I'm saying they may be. I don't know. But in terms of the... apologies, my computer totally took my attention here for a moment. In terms of the prices themselves and the petrol owners, they're not actually earning much from these increases.
Well, no, the perceived wisdom is that they generally make more from the cup of coffee that you buy than buy from €70 worth of petrol or diesel. So it would appear that it's not the retailers. I mean, they buy the product wholesale. They put on their small margin, which of course they're entitled to do. They've lights to put on and staff to pay. But what appears to be the case is that for sure internationally, when we compare it to other countries, we pay a lot of tax. We're not the most expensive, but they're right up there near the top of the charts globally, not even just in Europe, in terms of the highest petrol or diesel prices.
So, Paddy, are we going to see these prices reach €2.50? And if so, that's €2.50 for petrol, I'm assuming. And if so, how soon will we see that?
Well, look, I mean, it's always dangerous or difficult as well to predict fuel prices. But if the trajectory is on the current path, then that will happen reasonably soon. Because, you know, we've seen prices in the likes of Donegal up towards €2.30 a litre. So obviously the average, you know, nationally is different, but we have seen spots of pricing that is heading very much towards that €2.50 mark, which is just unprecedented. And, you know, as we said, it's costing the average motor €750 more per year to fuel their car than they were a year ago. And that's a dramatic figure. And that's on a very average user, not someone who depends on their car, maybe living in a rural area where there aren't proper alternatives.
Yes, and also, you know, not taking into consideration the cost of living and the increases there in terms of food, electricity, etc. Thank you very much for joining me. That is the head of communications with AA Ireland, Paddy Cumming. And I do have a bit of audio here from people in Carlow Town. They are saying that they have no other choice but to drive to work. That is in regards to the petrol prices, even though they would like to be taking public transport of some kind.
Can't work from home. I can't. The public transport is not, it's not a thing. And I can't cycle to work either. No.
There's no sort of buses straight direct to where I work. So, but yeah, it is at this point in my only option. I think the government does need to sort of cap it.
It is ironic because earlier on Kildare Today we were speaking about the price of fares here in Kildare. And if you look at tickets from Newbridge, right, this is for an adult single, it's €10.85 to get into Dublin. From Salins, it's €4.80. The difference there is €6.05. If you look at the time during off-peak, it just decreases from Newbridge into town by 40 cents, but it stays the same in terms of Salins. Then if you look at the return, adult day return, that is €16.90 from Newbridge train station, €8.85 from Salins train station. So that's €8.05. Nearly the price of the return ticket in Salins is the difference there. You look at the prices monthly. An adult monthly ticket is €190 from Newbridge, €103 from Salins, €87 of the difference. And then an adult weekly is €57.30 from Newbridge, €29.70 from Salins. And the difference there is €27.60. It's absolutely mad when you look at it. But a lot of people would say, you know, the changes have to stop somewhere. How far is this going to mean it will go out into? Is it as far as the Tay? Is it further down to Carlow? Is it where could it possibly end? Leash, Port Arlington, etc. So I think the main problem people are having is that they can just drive over to Salins, leave their car there, but they're using fuel to get there, would say, if they're coming from Newbridge or further south, and they are also not helping the environment. And the government talks about how public transport can really help us and they can help all countries in terms of climate change, but it seems as if it's still the hardest to get anything together at the moment in terms of the public transport system. I see a story here in the Irish Independent, and the headline is "All We've Become Is a Tax Collector for the Government." I said it to Paddy there, and he noted the retail aren't taking in as much as people do think or may believe that they are taking in. But Yvonne Murray is noting this service station in County Kilkenny, it's Cavanagh's, and they kept their fuel prices as low as possible to ensure a footfall in their shop. It was their business model that worked. The founder is Peter. He welcomed the same motorists travelling from Cork to Dublin every week for 30 years. But at lunchtime yesterday, the family-run business was making a profit margin of 0.3 cent per litre on diesel, which cost €2.03 per litre at the pump. The government was making 92 cent on the same litre. So the retailer, 0.3 cent per litre. The government making 92 cent per litre. So yeah, lots to be answered there in terms of the fuel crisis and who exactly it is benefiting or not benefiting if we remove any of these duties and taxes and VAT, etc, etc. Now, I do want you to get in touch though if you do have any prices around the county. Let me know. Paddy was noting that Newbridge is particularly bad. So do let me know. 0833 97 97 97. I know in Naas today, I was told by a listener it was 223.9 in one filling station. Another filling station in Naas was 222.9. So any more details, please let me know. I did see one. I actually filled up at one today in Naas at 212.9 per litre. That was petrol, that is. I'm speaking petrol there. So let me know both, please. Now, I am joined by the chief executive of ISME, that is Neil MacDonald. Neil, excuse me. Good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Ciara.
So yourselves at ISME, you want a tax hike for high-earning PAYE workers. Tell us why and how this can possibly be done by government.
Well, Ciara, we don't particularly want a tax hike for high-earning workers. It's just the fact that the self-employed high earners pay this already. We've been asking for several years for this USC levy to be removed, and it hasn't been. So, you know, rather than continue to back failure, we think the most sensible thing to do when there's this much demand on the public purse, and you've just been talking about all the measures that people are talking about now with the cost of living, we think the most sensible thing to do is say, right, if this levy is going to apply to the self-employed, the fairest thing is that it should apply to all PAYE workers. So that's a USC levy of 3% on PAYE workers earning over 100,000 per annum. And we estimate that would bring in around 300 million to the Exchequer per annum.
Wow. At the same time, the Business Owners Group does yourselves want capital gains tax reduced to 25%.
Yeah, and the interesting thing is that we reckon that would actually raise a very significant amount of money. So we've the fourth highest capital gains tax in Europe at 33%. And the interesting thing is capital gains only brings in a fraction of what it used to back in the day. Now, in the Celtic Tiger era, it was regularly bringing in over 2 billion, and at one stage it brought in over 3 billion a year. We're not advocating a return to that time when CGT tax was at 20% and there was a huge amount of froth in the market with property and all that sort of thing. So we're not advocating going back to that. But it's very interesting if you look at the yield from capital gains since the economy started to recover after the Great Recession. The yield from capital gains has not gone up in the same way. So whatever's going on, there is avoidance, and we think it's avoidance by simply reducing the number of capital transactions. And people are doing that because of the extortionate rate that applies. And we estimate that the Exchequer and the Minister are leaving potentially €500 million a year in uncollected tax on the table by just having a rate that's too high.
Now, you've also suggested the elimination of the PRSI transition zone. That's for lower paid workers, replacing with a PRSI rate of 2% on weekly earnings up to 400 per week. Earnings above €440 would then be charged 6%.
Yes. Now, what people might find very hard to understand is that there's a transition zone or a sweet spot, a dark spot for workers who earn between 18,000 and 22,000 euros a year, where within that zone, workers get charged a PRSI. Their PRSI can take up to 40% of each additional euro in earnings they make, believe it or not. A lot of people don't believe us when we say that. But it's due to this unfortunate phenomenon whereby workers earning up to 352 euros a week pay no PRSI. And then there's a complex formula for workers between 352 euros and 440 euros per week. So what we're saying is, I'm sorry, above 440 euros a week, people currently pay 4% PRSI, not just on their earnings above that, but on their earnings below that. And that's why we have this very bizarre, complex method for calculating PRSI. So we're saying, look, this system is daft. We've had it far too long. We need to radically simplify it. And what we do is that workers below 352 euros a week below 440 euros a week should pay 2% PRSI flat on all their earnings up to 440. And then we're suggesting, we know that the social fund needs to do an awful lot more heavy lifting with pensions and so on, and we're suggesting the introduction of a new 6% employee PRSI rate for workers above 440 euros per week. And that would be a net positive for all workers earning less than 800, all full-time workers earning less than 880 euros per week.
Now, ISMI would also like to see more encouragement from the government. This is to increase the number of firms opting to list on the stock exchange, as well as making it easy for employees to invest in such companies, which the vast majority of the Irish public is an employee, and they will no doubt be welcoming to the latter part of that statement.
Yes, and this is just a matter of looking at, you know, Ireland, we understand, although there's no preliminary figures out on the census yet, but we're going to break a population of 5 million this year. So we're not a million miles behind a few other countries of similar size in the European Union, specifically Finland and Sweden, and although not in the European Union, Norway is a member of EFTA, and they've five and a bit million people. But if you look at Denmark, Norway, and Sweden, those countries all have, you know, the thick end of 200 companies listed on their stock exchange. We've only 20, 25 odd companies whose primary listing is on our exchange, and nearly half the shares, the 40 odd companies on the Irish Stock Exchange, are actually have their main listing elsewhere. Now, what people might not realise is that, you know, when you pay someone a euro in salary or a bonus, you know, that euro is just worth a euro. But if they if you give them a euro in equity of the business, instead of saying, here's a euro in pay or a bonus, I'm going to give you a euro of equity, that will ultimately trade at 17 times the value of that euro. So Irish workers do not have access to this really significant store of wealth that would be available if their businesses could equity share with them. And, you know, there are really tax-efficient ways to do this in lots of other jurisdictions. You can actually do it here, but the problem is, unless you're actually an employee of that business, you can't do it within the tax code. So we're saying there are far too few Irish businesses listing, and that is having a real impoverishing effect on Irish workers. And we just want, you know, government to make it a bit easier to happen.
Now, finally, I want to ask you, you're against, I believe, the trend that employers buy accommodation for their staff, because you've noted that the government must help attract private landlords back into the Irish rental market. This is through the tax system. And you've said that the government must address also the cost of financing the deep retrofits in this year's budget due to the expense. Now, this year's budget, a lot, people could say every year this is the case, but a lot is riding on this year's budget, this cost of living crisis that we're currently seeing, inflation rates, etc., hasn't been seen since the 1970s, and some things are reaching record levels.
Yes. So two different things there, Ciara. The first one, and you may have seen it in the Business Post on Sunday, but it's actually a feature now in companies all over the place, including Kildare, that the rent has become so expensive that businesses are unable to pay their staff a wage that can rise to pay that rent. So what they're actually doing is employers are becoming the new accidental landlords. They're buying or renting accommodation and they're letting that to their staff at either below market rents or free of charge. Now, either way, that is creating a big tax problem both for the employer and the employee. And while I know a lot of people your listeners will say, isn't it a great thing when employers are doing that? That's not the primary mission of a business, and actually businesses shouldn't be doing that. The key to this is we need a supply of rental accommodation that takes sufficient that the price of rental falls. And at the moment, the private landlords have just been driven out of the market by the tax system. So government needs to revisit that. The second part, and we're all talking about energy, CO2 reduction and so on, and it's part of government plans. But you may, last year, Ciara, have seen that a lady in Wicklow who did a deep retrofit on just a fairly standard three-bed semi-D spent the thick end of €75,000 doing it. Now, even with SEAI grants, you're going to get a maximum of, depending on how far you go, between 25 and 33,000 from the SEAI to do your house. That's going to leave you with a balance you're going to have to finance of somewhere between 25 and 35,000 euro. And what we're saying is, you know, at the typical household spend on energy of 2,000 to 2,500 euros per annum, the saving is the cost benefit to that house in spending on a deep retrofit is just not going to be high enough to justify people borrowing that amount of money. Countries like Italy are doing interest-free loans to people to do deeper retrofits. And we're just saying to the government, look, if you're serious about this and you want people to spend their own money on deep retrofit, you're going to have to make it much more affordable and you're going to have to intervene to assist people to finance that.
Okay, thank you for talking to me this afternoon. That is the Chief Executive of ISMI, Neil MacDonald. Many of you won't need to be reminded of this, but I just am going to state this in regards to my next interview. The whole of County Kildare is a rent pressure zone, and Airbnb figures for the county have been revealed. I'm joined now by Councillor Chris Bender of the Social Democrats and Kildare Newbridge MD. Hello, Chris.
Hi, Ciara. How are you?
I am very well, thank you. First off, you put this motion forward February 2020, is that right, in terms of the amount of houses and apartments in this county that are on Airbnb?
Yes, so I put a motion in February 2020 to ask the council to confirm the numbers in Kildare that are currently available for rent under Airbnb, and then with a lot of kind of other statistics in relation to how many of them are rented for less than 90 days, how many of them are whole properties, all of this kind of stuff. Now, I resubmitted that motion in our last MD meeting because when I got the statistics and the figures back in February, there was... The council essentially had zero information. They weren't sure. Now, back at that meeting, I presented them with, I think it was a 37-page presentation that had all the stats they could ever want in their life. But when I resubmitted this motion, now, first of all, it's good to see that there has been progress on it, because back then there were zero properties that were being investigated. Now, the data that I got was from a site called InsideAirbnb.com, and the council have continued to use that and other sites, which has calculated that there's over 270 properties for let on the Airbnb website. In County Kildare. And of those 270, 130 of them are either entire homes or apartments.
Now, so the other 140 are what then?
So the other 140 would be somebody renting out a room short term in their home, or, you know, I know there's one property down in Wicklow, for instance, that's a treehouse.
Okay.
Like, you know what I mean? So they could be anything from a home to a tent to a glamping pod to any of these kind of things. And they're not what my focus is on, to be very clear, because they are clearly for tourism purposes. They are clearly for the purpose of somebody who is visiting an area to use. Now, my focus is on the 130 that are entire homes or apartments.
So the first question I want to ask you, do you have the locations in terms of, you know, the towns that they're in or the areas that they're in?
I don't have a breakdown of those figures, okay. But I do have the locations. Now, predominantly, you'll find them in Newbridge, you'll find them in Maynooth, you'll find them in Naas. There's a number of them in Athy. And then there's kind of smaller pockets of them in areas like Kilcullen or Ballymore Eustace or kind of, you know, the other kind of far-flung places. You'll even find some along the border with Edenderry, like in and around near where Edenderry is, because people will be using those for tourism purposes to cross into other counties. Now, Kira, the reality is I get it. People need to make money. People need to support whatever they're doing. But the reality, like, we're in the middle of a homelessness and housing crisis. If you look at the 130 entire homes or apartments that are currently for let within the county, you're talking about 37% of those, sorry, 28% of those being available for full-time let, which is completely prohibited under current legislation. So you're talking about a good maybe 30, 40 homes that are available all year long, every day of the year, for full-time let. You're talking about 37 families that are being left without a home because somebody wants to profit off the housing crisis. Because I think another thing to bear in mind when we talk about these things is that when we're sending out rental properties or residential properties that would normally be used to house families, to house individuals that are struggling to find homes, when we're using those for short-term let or for tourism reasons, that's going to exacerbate and further inflate the cost of rent in an area. I know of a number of the homes that are currently for rent. I'd say the vast majority of those are in areas where people want to continue to live, where their kids are going to schools. Like only recently I was contacted by two families who were evicted from their homes last year. Now, it was a legal eviction, so they had no issue with that, and they were lucky enough that they found somewhere else to live. But they went on to Airbnb only maybe 2-3 weeks ago and found the two properties that they had been living in for rent on Airbnb. Like, you're talking about landlords kicking people out so that they can turn a home into a tourism possibility.
When you actually hear
that is factual. It's very scary. And you know, the pressure that families are under currently, we know we had a homeless and a housing crisis way before the pandemic, and it obviously still mattered as much then. But now, currently, with this cost of living crisis, lots of people who never expected to be in the position of potentially losing their homes or not being able to pay their mortgage or their rent or whatever it may be, are now at risk of homelessness.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's like, so if we move away from Airbnb for a second and we look in somewhere like daft.ie, like if you look at daft.ie and you look at the rental properties that are currently available on daft.ie, there is only 29 properties. Now, we can
in
move
the whole
away.
County, that is.
In the whole county, okay. There are 29 yep. properties. And you are talking about three times that on Airbnb alone that are full homes or apartments. Again, like I said, I'm not talking about somebody having an Airbnb, like having a bedroom in their house rented out on Airbnb, although that is an issue in and of itself, because you have people who are just single people who are quite happy to rent out a room. But like, we're talking about full families. Like, we're talking about nearly, like, it's infuriating, because you're talking about 25, 26 families that are being left without a home because somebody wants to profit from it. Now, I've looked at these
stats. Chris, I want you to give me a bit more detail in terms of the houses being rented for over 90 days.
So, according to Rent Pressures...
And when I say rented, I mean in terms of Airbnb.
On Airbnb, yeah. So, according to legislation that was introduced in relation to the Residential Tenancies Act and the Rent Pressure Zone status, any home rented within a county that's in a rent pressure zone, and like you said on the introduction there, we are in a rent pressure zone. Year-long short-term lets, it's really difficult to get that word out, year-long short-term lets are actually completely prohibited within a rent pressure zone. So there is legislation there to prevent this kind of thing from happening, but the reality is that legislation is not being enforced. We're faced with a system where there is the capability for enforcement, but there's not necessarily the capacity for enforcement. Like, you're talking about regulating individual properties instead of regulating the platforms those properties are going on to. Like, if we regulate these properties, if we don't allow for illegal short-term lets to be rented, to be advertised that are within rent pressure zones, that will have an impact. Now, not necessarily the greatest impact in the world or the impact that we want, but it will actually create a system that we can follow up on, that we can... It's like I said to you, in 2020, when I gave these stats to Kildare County Council, they didn't have that information. They do have that information now, and they've kind of worked upon it now. Nowhere near to the level that I would have liked for them to have worked, because I think they now, to be fair, they had 54 of the 270 overall. They assessed them, and 21 of those cases were closed. Now, I've asked for further clarity on exactly how they were closed,
okay.
But 21 of those cases have been closed. But it's like there's a reason why rent pressure zones exist. Rent pressure zones exist in areas where the homelessness and housing crisis is further exacerbated, either by its proximity to cities, like, for instance, like it's part of the reason why Kildare as a whole county got rent pressure zone status, because what was happening was you had somewhere like Dublin that had its rent pressure zone status, but people were moving out of there. It was further inflating or increasing the cost of housing in Kildare, in Meath, in Wicklow, all of these places.
Okay, well, Chris, look, it's very interesting, the figures and asking that question and finding out all that information. I don't have enough time to go through it in more detail at the moment, but thank you so much. That is the Social Democrat councillor for Kildare and Newbridge Municipal District, Chris Pender, on that. He first brought it up with a council motion in February 2020, so just before the pandemic. And as he noted, to date, 54 of the lettings had been assessed, 21 of the cases had been closed. He hasn't got full clarity as to how, why,
why, when, the reasons, etc. But investigations are ongoing, it was noted, and of the 33 files that remain open and currently under investigation, should there be a requirement to regulate the same, this will be done through the enforcement system. So we have a little bit more detail in terms of, there was one conviction nationally for €1,000. The fine seems to indicate there isn't much investigation. That is what Councillor Peter Hamilton of the Green Party said, in some solidarity with Chris Pender's motion there. It's very, very interesting, and I'm sure we'll hear more from Chris and Airbnb figures in this county.